Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What up, what up, what up? Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the seventh episode of the Backwards K Baseball Podcast. My name is Chris Asbrock, and I'm your host. And again, each and every week, I am joined by my main man, Scott Kaiser. Scott, how you doing, buddy?
What's going on, man? What's going on? Another week of baseball in the books.
Oh, yeah. It was actually a pretty easy week, not like the craziness we've had last couple weeks, but overall, I mean, it's baseball. I mean, it's you can't ask for much more.
Very low key.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it. Which is how this show's going to be. Pretty low key. So, I mean, there we go. But you want to get into it?
Let's go, man. Let's go. All right. Lead things off.
Let's do it. Well, we had one more call up this past week, and that was the Texas Rangers calling up their second overall pick from 2021. Shoot, I'm having a blank on it.
Yeah, it's 20. You're 2021. You're good.
I was like, oh man, I was like, I got 2021. Then I was like, wait a minute. I started to second guess myself. Pitcher out of Vanderbilt, Jack Leiter. Jack has been one of my favorite pitchers during his time with Vanderbilt. And when Texas got him, it was a no-brainer that he was going to be in the major leagues. Obviously, son of Al Leiter. Made his debut on Thursday against the Detroit Tigers at Comerica Park. Scott, what were your thoughts when you saw that Jack got the call up finally? He did subsequently get sent back down, but that was kind of, you know, I'd say not, you know, standard operating procedure on that. But what were your thoughts, you know, when you saw that he got the call finally? And what were your thoughts on his performance as well?
I thought, wow, look at nepotism again at its finest in Major League Baseball. You got to be related to somebody to get in this sport, I guess.
Jesus.
It was exciting to hear the name because I've heard it many times ever since he got drafted that, you know, he was, in fact, the son of Al Leiter, and people have been looking forward to his debut. A little bit of a stumble while he was in the minors. That's kind of why he got set back, I guess. He has control problems, and that's part of the reason why his progression was a little bit slower than they expected. But he looked okay to start, and then the Tigers went to town and reminded him why this is the big leagues and that the minor leagues are probably where he needs to get a little bit more seasoning. He looked like just about any other rookie did, a little bit of deer in headlights action. Like I said, he started off, got through the first inning, and everything was like, all right, I'm here. I've arrived. I think he struck out two. I know he struck out at least one, and that's pretty much where the wheels fall off from there. Didn't get to see much of him after that. He labored through the second inning, and by the third, he was yanked out of there. And as you mentioned, sent back down to the minors, so it might be a little while before we see him again, but it happens to the best of them, and there are a couple of kids that came up last year. I remember Brian Wu came up against the Rangers, same type of thing, got rocked in his first start, went back down for a couple of weeks, straightened some things out. And the next time there was an opening in Seattle, he was right back up. So Leiter can find himself in the same type of situation, but he definitely has some things to work on once he hits the minors again.
Well, he went 3 2/3. He gave up eight hits. Yeah, eight hits and seven runs. I mean, it was – I guess I just want to say it was just a typical debut for, you know, for a rookie, one that has not completely blown the doors off of the minor leagues. Now, you know, you look at, for example, Paul Skeens and what he's doing right now with, you know, with Indianapolis and AAA. That dude's, he's unhittable. And there's more of an anticipated debut with Paul Skeens than there is Jack Leiter, simply because Jack did struggle through the minors, like you did mention. And that's one thing, you know, that it was fun to see, you know, his progression through the minors, because it wasn't easy for him. Now at Vanderbilt, the dude was – he was lights out at Vandy. For the majority of his career there, he was phenomenal. Him and Kumar Rocker, who are now teammates again, but they were, you know, the same situation. And now, you know, you can just see the pregame warm-ups and everything like that. I mean, I watched the game, and he was – you could definitely tell he was, you know, he was looking around. He was in awe. And this is a kid who's been around the ballpark the majority of his life. You know, big league ballparks, that is, because obviously with his dad. But that was – I mean, I'm not going to take, you know, put much stock into it. I mean, it is what it is. Again, sometimes, you know, and like you said, it happens the best of them, and that's what happened here. Now, one thing I did see, you know, was the ERA part, because he's got a 17.18 ERA. You know, I don't put much stock into ERA either, because – there was a misplay out in the outfield that caused multiple runs to score. It wasn't scored an error, and therefore, you know, his ERA is getting, you know, hammered for it. But, you know,
if I was him, though, I would walk around and tell everybody my debut was better than Yamamoto. If his ERA is only 17, it's better than the 54 Yamamoto.
I was going to say, yeah, right, Yamamoto.
So I'd be like, I wasn't making 325 mil to suck.
Well, exactly. I mean, you talk about it, and I mean,
that's an L that he wasn't making 325 mils.
Exactly. And that was a highly anticipated debut, to see him get absolutely rocked. So again, you know, not all bad there if you're Jack Leiter. So yeah.
Robert wants to know if you're playing with poker chips.
No.
Did you just get busted?
No, I'm not.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, I was going to say, what is that sound?
Because I'm sitting here, I'm like, I don't hear anything. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, it did sound like poker chips were rubbing together.
No, that's why I was like, no, I don't know. Is it my chair? Hell, I don't know. Shit, I don't know. God, dude, I mean, we're 7 minutes into this and it's already gone sideways. Dang it, man.
Quit rubbing your poker chips together, Chris. Damn.
Sorry, I'm going all in. Jesus. Well, on that note, let's see. Mason Miller. This dude he's one we talked about last week, and your simple statement was Mason Miller is him. Well, dude continues to show it another week. And this kid, and even what he did today, if you get a chance to see what he did today in the ninth inning against the New York Yankees, I mean, him just facing Aaron Judge was – definitely something you have to check out. But Scott, you're right, man. Mason Miller is him.
Yeah, blowing the doors off. He's come in five innings since he became the closer officially. He's got 12 strikeouts to one walk, five innings pitched, five saves. And every time he comes in, it's must-see TV. In fact, it's set up perfectly today for the ninth. Geloff had hit a home run in the bottom of the top of the eighth, to make sure that the A's would have a lead heading into the bottom of the eighth. Once the top of the ninth rolled around, it was all on for Mason Miller. Struck out Soto, Judge, and who was prior to Soto? Doesn't matter. Who's the kid that shortstop? Volpe.
Yeah, Volpe.
Volpe, Soto, and Judge to K the side. It was beautiful to see. And like you mentioned, like we talked about last week, Mason Miller, one of the most exciting players in the game right now. It's unfortunate that he plays for Oakland, because just about nobody gets to see him, and they're trying to protect his arm because he does throw 103, so he doesn't pitch on back-to-back days. But it's not really often that the A's have save opportunities on back-to-back days, so that shouldn't be much of an issue. But the more Mason Miller we get to see, the better off we all are as baseball fans.
Yeah, so far this year, eight games, He doesn't have a win or loss record. 1.8 ERA in 10 innings, 20 Ks in 10 innings. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, this kid is, like you said it last week, Scott, he is must see. And you, I mean, I believe you said it last week that you tune in intentionally when you see it's a situation.
Oh, I did it today. When I saw that it was going to the ninth, that I knew that he was coming out, I brought it up on my phone just to watch the last inning. I mean, he's that good. And it just so happened that I happened to be following what was going on in the game, so I knew. But it's one of those things where if there was an ability to have just a Mason Miller's coming into the game alert pop up on my phone, I would.
Oh, that yeah, that's what it's – I mean, that's what it's all about, you know, seeing guys like that in situations. You know, it's something that Oakland fans needed. I mean, this is – I had a family member who – cousin of mine just actually came back from – Oakland. She went out to see the A's and I want to say the Giants. She went out there as well. And she asked her, I was like, what's the Coliseum like? She goes, it's sad. Like, it was sad. I'm like, that sucks. Like, I mean, such a storied franchise. And it's just, I mean, it's in shambles. So it sucks. But, you know, having a player like Mason Miller, somebody that fan base can rally around and somebody that, you know, the game of baseball, you know, can, it's another star that we've seen in a game where or in a league that, you know, we continuously see stars rise and well, and also fall as well. But yeah, Mason Miller, you know, good on him. This kid, again, electric and fun as hell to watch each and every game he's in. So
Matt Barr saying that he's going to look great when an insert rival AL West team here in 4 years, which it's true. I was talking to my brother about it earlier and I'm like, can you imagine Mason Miller on an actual contender? It would be amazing if he was able to pitch for a team that had aspirations of winning it all, or a team that was coming down the stretch and was one bullpen arm away from it. I would love to see him pitch for contender, but unfortunately we know while he's in Oakland, or if he makes it to Sacramento next year, we know that the team probably won't be in a position either case to make the playoffs or even come close for a push. So it sucks that he's going to be buried while he's out there, but hopefully there is a scenario or there is a team that comes calling that's not the Yankees or the Mets or the Dodgers to get a Mason Miller and make it so that we can see him in prime time, or the Phillies for that. Fuck them too.
I mean, you got to get that in each and every.
Yeah. I get it. No NLS team, NL East teams. How about that?
All right, fair enough. Unless okay, so one. Right now the A's are sitting in fourth in the West. So say, you know, it stays, you know, status quo throughout the year, which, you know, God only knows at this point in time. If you're the A's and you're out of it, and Mason Miller continues to do what you know what he's doing. You know, is that something you entertain, that idea of dealing him to bring in, you know, prospects or whatever to continue to build up this team? Or do you keep him and roll into Sacramento next year with him? Like, that's an interesting situation for Oakland because, I mean, previously they always would deal the guys. But I don't know. This one seems kind of different, though. It feels weird, you know, like it's not normal Oakland A's.
Well, I think that they probably hold on to him because they've got him for really cheap. He's not even close to reaching any type of money plateaus or anything where it becomes super expensive. But also, if you are the A's and a team does come calling with a boatload of prospects or makes you a big, giant offer, then you absolutely should ship him off. I mean, you're already protecting him because you're worried about his arm, so you don't pitch him 2 days in a row. He has a horrible injury history, which is why he's a closer in the first place. And for a team that we mentioned isn't going to have too many games to close all that often, you know, over the course of the next couple of years to begin with, I just think if you're the A's, it's pointless to have a superstar closer sitting there only getting to throw every so often and ultimately just meaningless games. So if anybody offers you anything that you think is worth the value. Now, the problem is the last few times the A's have made trades for anybody, they've gotten beaten. So I don't know if we can trust Billy Bean and come here to make the right choice and get somebody or get a package of somebody's that's worthwhile. But Again, if you can, you absolutely should if you're this organization, because you're nowhere near competing and you need all the talent you can get. I mean, today, again, I think since the last episode, Esteri Ruiz got called back up to the team, yeah. And they've been playing all sorts of games with when he starts, when he sits, when they pull him out of games for pinch hitters. It's been an absolute nightmare. He got pinch hit for today, I think, in the eighth inning. He had already been on base twice. He's got the highest on base percentage, highest average. Now, granted, again, much smaller sample size than everybody else because he got sent down to the minors and he hasn't played as many games, but it just seems really confusing what the A's are doing. So if they don't know what they're doing with their players on a day-to-day basis, they might as well ship off the ones that anybody offers them anything for.
Exactly, yeah, because at that point, if they're going to give you anything, you might as well take it. So, I mean, what the hell, why not? Oh, and side note, I figured out what the poker chip thing was. It's my necklace. I can hear it. I got that'd be what it is. If you can hear that.
Oh, that is, and then yeah. That is what it is. It's
a, I'm like, what the hell are you guys talking about? And here I am, like, oh shit, I moved and there we go. Yeah.
I knew it was something your mic was picking up because it only did, when you would talk, something would happen. So
yeah, that's what it is. So
mystery solved.
Yeah, I'm not dealing over here.
Glad to put that to bed.
Yeah, yeah. For all you wondering out there, we got it figured out, so don't worry. Well, one reason to worry is here in Cincinnati is Frankie Montas going to the 15-day IL. He took a line drive straight in the pitching arm/elbow yesterday. Pretty nasty. It looked like it swelled up pretty good. Post game, I believe, is where I saw it. Had a pretty good knot. They're one of the Reds' top, you know, free agent pitchers in terms of cost. And the, you know, I guess the leader of the rotation at this point in time is now down for 15 days. Where do the Reds go here? Because we are at a point now to where they are in a hellish, the beginning of a hellish stretch, hellish month and a half, let's put it that way, for the Cincinnati Reds. And not to have a guy like Frankie Montas at the top of the rotation is certainly going to sting. Despite the fact his last two starts, he hasn't been the best. He hasn't been what we've seen out of him in Oakland. It's more like what we've seen out of him when he was with the Yankees last year. So, but in terms of, you know, in terms of injuries, this is not, you know, what the Reds were looking for here at this point in time. You know, you've got TJ Friedl down still. You know, just big name players are out. Obviously, Matty McClain, and now you add Montas to this, and it's not ideal for the Reds, who in fact right now are losing to Philadelphia. Last I saw was 4-0. So again, just it seems like it continuously is you know, starting to compound itself here, and really not look good for you know, for the Reds here in Cincinnati. But in terms of, you know, injury-wise, Frankie's just another one to add to the list of pitchers that have gone down so far this season.
Cheer up, Buttercup. You'll be fine. Nick Lodolo's back, and everything's going to be all right. You swap one in, and you get an even better one coming back on the other side. I mean, look, Frankie Montas was a nice pickup for Cincinnati, and, you know, he kind of stabilized things to start the season, and you know, with Lodolo out and some of the other guys kind of on the mend, getting back into the groove of things, at some point we figured he was going to be hurt. It just so happened that this time the ball found him instead of his own body breaking down. Like you mentioned, he wasn't pitching all that great to begin with. So I don't think it's a huge loss for the Reds. I mean, you don't want to lose anybody, and you much rather have all the pitchers you can get, because we've seen how quickly pitching depth can dry up. So it's not as if you just say, well, you know, we didn't need him. Sure, the Reds needed him, and it's going to hurt just a little bit, but it's not the end of the world because of the timing of Nick Lodolo coming back. And he's looked awesome since he's come back. So as long as they can kind of just keep things afloat and get through the next couple of weeks and get some guys back in, I think they'll be able to weather it. The more shocking part is the start that the Brewers have gotten off to in that division, being 14-6 and just kind of, you know, I know we both said that they would be somewhere near and doing the battle, but we also thought that they would take a step back by – after losing Corbin Burns, and apparently we were wrong about that, unless they plan on having some injuries of their own, which they dealt with Yelich being out, but it hasn't seemed to slow them down in the early goings. What are your thoughts on the Brewers so far this season?
Well, they shut us the hell up, man. I mean, it's dude, right now going into it, you know, they got a 2-game lead, like you said, 14-6, 2 games up right now over the Chicago Cubs and 2.5 over the Reds. Milwaukee was one that I didn't think they were going to, I mean, I didn't think they were going to be there. You know, they had the potential. I just thought that the losses, you know, in terms of pitching and everything like that, were going to be, you know, felt a little harder than what they are so far. But the Brewers have given me two middle fingers and told me to to shut right up. And I can't argue. I mean, and looking at what they've done so far, I mean, 14-6, I know we're, you know, we're 20 games in, but 14-6 for a team that I didn't think was going to be even remotely in this position, you know, I'm impressed. I really am impressed. And it's Milwaukee's just that organization that just, no matter what, they're always there. And that's one that, I mean, as a division rival, it sucks. I mean, it's, I hate it because obviously I want the Reds to be, you know, right there, but you know, they're just,
They've actually played really, really well on the road. They've already played 12 games and they're 10-2 on the road, just 4-4 at home. So, I mean, they're
coming off of a sweep on the road at St. Louis too.
Yeah. I mean, that's early in the year. It's a lot harder when you're just getting things going to play games on the road. So that's very impressive through their first 20 games to have done that.
Yeah. I mean, it's again, I'm kind of speechless on it because I'm like, man, like I didn't see it coming. And, you know, more props to them. You know, it started off the season, you know, with Pittsburgh being in that position, you know, Pittsburgh and Milwaukee battling out, but Pittsburgh has fallen off the wayside. Now they're at 511-11, you know, and they're what they are 4 games out now. And I just took a quick glance at the standings, but you know, this division is so weird because, you know, going into it, you know, in our prognostication pod that we did, and what was that, second episode, I think? I think it was the second episode, mm-hmm. You know, where we talked about, you know, our predictions for the, you know, for the division. You know, I know I said it, but it could be won by, you know, multiple teams, like in all reality. You know, you can say that, you know, for every division, obviously. But, you know, this was set to be a really close race. And I didn't have Milwaukee in it. And now it's kind of muddied, you know, with them. But it seems like if the Reds can navigate, you know, where they are right now and them only being 2.5 back at this point in time, you know, it's shaping up to be a 3-horse race for the division. Again, we are only in April. I get it. You know, there's a shit ton of baseball to play. So obviously things are going to change. Injuries are going to change everything. But as of right now, I mean, I'm impressed as all hell with what I've seen coming out of Milwaukee. And, you know, they let's see, this past week, they took they only won one game against San Diego at home, which was kind of interesting. The Padres they're that team that are, you know, they're intriguing. And we said that going into the season, but, you know, they go and take 2 to 3 on the road against Milwaukee, which that was an eyebrow raiser, but then, you know, Milwaukee rebounds, like I said, with a 3-game sweep of St. Louis on the road. So Milwaukee doesn't care. They just continue to play baseball, and it's damn good baseball, and they continue to put up wins.
Well, and if we're looking at – we want to talk about teams getting off to a fast start. Let's talk about the Guardians over on the other side. Jesus. Rex Million wanting to bring up the clicking Guardians, and you could say that the Guardians are clicking. They have the best run differential. Stop me if you have a bingo, because the Guardians have a 52 run differential right now in the central, well, in all of baseball at 16-6. They've been putting up runs at a crazy pace, considering this is a team that we thought one was going to struggle again this season, like they did last year, but two, they're not known for putting up runs. Josh Naylor has that team humming, and they haven't missed a beat under the new leadership over there with Terry Francona having stepped away in retirement. So the Guardians, another surprising team in the AL Central, just like the Brewers. But I think maybe even more surprising than the Brewers from my standpoint, because the way they're doing it with the offense is not something that I would have ever guessed. They've been much more known for their pitching over the years. They have a pretty solid rotation, and their pitching's been all right. Their bullpen's been really good, but that offense has just been amazing.
Oh, it's been incredible, and I'm going here to the stats for it. Stephen Kwan continues to be Stephen Kwan, batting .358. This team is ridiculous. I mean, and they this past week, they take 6 of 7 in their games. They took 3 of 4 from the Boston Red Sox, who have been surprising as well, which we'll touch on them here. They take 3 of 4 at Boston, which, you know, anytime you can go on the road and take, you know, more than a split against a team on the road is pretty impressive. And then they followed up with a sweep versus Oakland. I mean, that's, you know, this team continues to impress. I mean, just – and looking at – see, I was looking at the pitching stats here as well. Bibee leads the team ERA with, 4.44 ERA. Again, ERA is something, like I said just a little bit ago, not something I put too much stock into. He's got 26 strikeouts as well, so he's been phenomenal. And anytime you have a guy like Emmanuel Clase at the back end of your bullpen, I mean, the dude's already got 6 saves already this year. I mean, and this was a guy that they were talking about, dealing at some point, in the offseason. There were so many rumors about Clase being possibly dealt, along with Shane Bieber. Obviously, we know what happened with Bieber, a week or two ago. But again, having a guy like Emmanuel Clase to close it out, it's like one of those things, like all you got to do is just go in with the lead and you know what's going to happen. And that's what Cleveland's doing. But you said the run differential, Jesus Christ, 52 already. I mean, that's absurd for a team that I didn't think was going to have too much offense. And they've, pretty much this is kind of coming to looking like I have no idea what the hell I'm talking about in the majority of this stuff, because this year is so crazy with what we've seen. And it's, this is another situation, but again, the Guardians 16-6 right now, best team in baseball. Tip of the cap to them, because they are playing lights out, and it's impressive to see what's going on Northern Ohio.
Rex pointing out that the Guardians have played the A's twice, which, that's a good point, but also this time of year and any time in any sport, you can only play the games that are in front of you. And
yeah,
the A's went to New York today and beat the Yankees at home. So, the A's are capable of winning a game just like everybody else, maybe less likely than everybody else, but still a capable team if they can go in New York and beat and shut out the Yankees at home. So, there's nothing to, it's nothing to scoff at if you're taking care of business, if you're the Guardians, by beating the A's, because the A's are a team that you're supposed to beat.
Exactly. And here's the thing, like if they say they lose, 3 or 4 to the White Sox, then, it's, and you do that twice, I'll give you that. But again, like you said, you're playing teams in front of you, and that's just how it is. And again, the A's are not, right now they're 9-14. They're not bad. It's not like they're the White Sox, who come in at 3-18. That's, I'll take, as of right now, I'll take the A's 100 times out of 100 against the White Sox. White Sox are awful. If you've watched any White Sox baseball, it is abysmal. So, you're playing the teams in front of you, like you said, Scott, and that's spot on. So I'm not going to, I'm not going to take any, anything away from Cleveland for who they've played so far. Like I said, you go on the road and you take 3 or 4 at Boston, then you come home. That's impressive stuff. I don't care who it is. And it's just, you still got to get it done. And Cleveland's doing that right now. And that's, again, in a division that I said was a 2-horse race, and it's kind of quickly becoming a 3-horse race. Well, really solo, because right now Cleveland's kind of pulling away, but
Well, it's like you mentioned the rest of that division. Detroit's also been impressive. They lead the entire league with bullpen ERA under a run and a half, which is kind of unexpected, because their bullpen wasn't exactly something that was seen to be a strength. We had talked about the Royals in the offseason making some sneaky signings and be a team to watch this year. They've played well. They're right behind the Guardians in the standings. And then, you know, we did think that Minnesota would struggle a bit. Now they've started off rough with injuries, so they're only at 7-13 to start the year. So they haven't really got going. And then, yeah, the White Sox are probably the worst team in baseball. And you're right. While the A's take all the heat and they get all the jokes and everything, the White Sox are one of the worst teams in baseball, not only this season, but the last couple of seasons. Like, they don't look like a major league team whatsoever when you look at the names on the roster and the results in the box score. It's just been a disaster for the most part. They have 3 wins on the season.
It's awful. I mean, it is awful. I mean, they're sitting 12.5 back already. I mean, that's stunning. I mean, Jesus. I mean, you're 20. I mean, they've played 21 games. They're already 12.5 back. I mean, that's, again, like you said, there's nothing even remotely positive, you know, to come out of Chicago right now for it. It's not fun. Like I said, if you're a baseball fan, don't watch any baseball that involves the Chicago White Sox. Unless your team's playing them and you know they're going to clap them. Other than that, it's not worth it. It's not. It is awful. And, I mean, they did sneak one against Kansas City, you know, to begin the week last week. But then they, you know, they followed up getting swept by Philadelphia. And that was – there were 9 sweeps last week alone. And, you know, the White Sox were, you know, were a victim of one of them.
And I believe at – one point on Friday or whatever, they had gotten no hit into the 6th inning in like 3 straight games or something like that. I think they've been no hit the longest to start each game so far this season, like by far more than any other team.
That is so bad. I mean, you can't even make it up. I mean, you really can't. I mean, they're legitimately going to push for one of the worst teams in the league in a long time, like, you know, finishing overall. Because what was it? Was it last year that I want to say Oakland finished? Man, they were one of the years, I can't remember off the top of my head. I'll have to look it up here pretty soon, but it was like one of the years, like, Oakland was just, I mean, absolutely abysmal. I mean, hell, the Reds a couple years ago were awful, you know, but this team's gonna lose well over 100 games. I mean, that's not a question. It's how many wins are they going to get? I mean,
Mike says he doesn't know how, but it's Tony La Russa's fault.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Guy's an asshole. I'll gladly blame him. Gladly blame him. Can't stand Tony La Russa.
Before we switch gears and head back over to the National League to talk about the Mets, let's talk about some kind of surprising teams, but in the other direction, the Houston Astros. What's going on with the Astros? We talk about teams that we were expecting to be at the top of the division, and the Astros were one of them. I believe we both had them back in the playoffs, and if I'm not mistaken, you had them in the ALCS.
I had them in the World Series. Thank you, Scott.
Oh, okay. You had
the World Series. Yeah.
I had Baltimore, and I honestly didn't remember that you had Houston, but wow, what a boner by you.
I was going to say, yeah, because they're getting boned out of the high heavens each and every freaking series.
Well, look, again, it's early, but I am surprised at how poorly Houston's played. And it hasn't just been, you know, the pitching, because they've lost Framber Valdez and they've had to rely on quite a few rookie call-ups over the last couple of weeks just to make sure they had guys to start. And Verlander just got back off the injury list. So it's been a bit of a revolving door already to start the season on the pitching front. But the offense, they already have a negative 28 run differential this year.
I was just going to say that.
And,
yeah,
and they have struggled to score runs. Like, this has not been an offense that has struggled much over the last few years, especially during their run of success. So to see the same names and not many injuries, if any at all, to the bigger name guys, it's kind of bizarre. And I know, again, it's early, but not a team that we expected to see struggle right out of the gate like they have been.
No, and that was one thing that, you know, going into the season, we knew that it was going to be a slower start for them simply because of the injuries on the pitching side. But like you said, and I'm going to, you know, verbal retweet on this, that, you know, we didn't expect the offense to be this bad. The offense is awful. And that's the one thing, like you said, a minus 28 run differential already. You expected, with the players that are on Houston's roster, you would expect offense, plain and simple. They're going to outscore teams. You know, this is a situation, you know, like I said, they're going to start off slow because of the injuries to, you know, at the beginning of the year. Okay, so they're going to win games 8-7. Or, okay, they're going to win games, you know, 11-10, stuff like that. No, they're not even doing that. And that's the amazing part about it. I mean, they're 7-16 right now. So it's not – with the team of this caliber, with the roster they have and the experience they have, all is not lost, thankfully for them. I would say, you know, any other situation, I don't think I would be as optimistic for a team that's, you know, sitting last in the division more than what I am, you know, right now with Houston. I think they're, you know, they turn it on. I think they're going to be okay. They're going to battle for a wild card. Thankfully for them that the division is not out of hand right now. Texas is, you know, they haven't pulled away because none of these teams in the American League West can get out of their own way. And that's really, they're beating up on each other. They're dropping series that they shouldn't. I mean, it's just the American League West is a weird division this year. Like I said, when the Oakland Athletics are ahead of the Houston Astros in the division standings, that tells you everything you need to know. It's just, again, if Houston can find the offense, if they can turn that switch on, this is going to be a very dangerous team because of the pedigree they have. You know, Jose Altuve, you know, you've got Kyle Tucker, you've got Alex Bregman, you've got all these guys. You know, it's just, you know, it is what it is. They turn it on, they're going to be okay. And it's just a matter of, you know, when does it happen? And if it happens, if it does, when, hopefully it's not too late, you know, for them. But, you know, if it doesn't, then it's going to be quite an intriguing season. But right now, I mean, Houston is, it's a bit stunning to see. You know, they go on the road and at home, they dropped all three at home to Atlanta last week. So Atlanta gets the sweep at Houston. And then they proceed to drop, you know, two of three to the Washington Nationals. I mean, you can't imagine that. Like, I never would have thought that going into this week that, you know, you knew it was going to be a battle against, you know, against the Braves, but, you know, to lose two or three to Washington, that's what kind of gets me. So you lose 5-6
at home.
Yeah. In two big series. That's pretty tough, you know, for the Astros. But again, they turn it on. I think they're going to be okay. But right now it's pretty shocking.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned that the AL West is just kind of stuck in the mud. Well, if you look at the NL West, it's much the same. I mean, the Dodgers spending a gajillion dollars in the offseason, bringing in all these guys, and they're only out to a 13-11 start, a little slow, 3-7 in their last 10, and everybody kind of asking, you know, when are the Dodgers going to get going? Again, the names on the back of the jerseys will prevail and the Dodgers will be fine, but it is a little bit of a surprise to see them get off to kind of a sluggish start is the better way. Like, they haven't really struggled, and the rest of the division, you know, they're still in first place. The rest of the division is playing, you know, kind of a similar way. And maybe the only surprise there is that Arizona, after the World Series appearance, has gotten off they sit a game under 500 at the moment. So they've gotten off to a little bit of a slow start, but you know, both divisions in the West look interesting when you look at the fact that two of the teams that have traditionally been there in the end, at least in the championship series, and both the Dodgers and the Astros struggling to move quickly out of the gates this year, like we're accustomed to seeing. But the team that had most surprised me and that I wanted to make sure that I gave props to, because it's not often I do, is the New York Mets, who have played really well to start the season. You know, despite the fact that they didn't make a whole lot of moves in the offseasons, the ones that they did were, you know, just kind of housekeeping moves, making sure that they moved the roster along and kept things churning. But I've been kind of impressed. I know that when the Braves played the Mets in Atlanta, it was supposed to be a 4-game series, and one of the games got canceled because of rain. But technically, the Mets came in, and because it ended up being the 3-game series, they won 2 out of 3. So they beat the Braves in Atlanta. And I, you know, I kind of brushed it off. It's early, didn't think much of it, but the Mets have continued to play very good baseball so far to start the season. They're 12-9, only 2.5 games back of Atlanta. And again, it's just April, and you know, all this stuff is are just kind of early season talking points and things get going, but didn't really see the Mets as bad as they played last year, kind of hanging tough and playing this well this early on. I if you would have asked me who would I think had have 7 wins at this point between the Mets and the Astros, it would have been the Mets 1,000 times out of 1,000.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't argue that one at all. I mean, and the Mets are 8-2 in their last 10. So that's, you know, they've been impressive. I mean, they've been really, really impressive. You know, they sweep Pittsburgh at home, and they take 2 or 3 from the Dodgers. So, I mean, it's not like they're beating up on crappy teams. They're taking care of business against teams that are quality. So that's, you know, it's not like, you know, they're beating up on the White Sox each and every week, because they're not. Again, props to them. I mean, 2.5 back right now at this point in time, and you know, the Braves are, it's the NL East is such a top heavy division, with it being Atlanta and Philadelphia. We know those are going to be the two teams each and every time, each and every year. It's always the question is, well, where are the Mets going to fit in? Well, right now, the Mets aren't going away. They're that pain in the ass that just literally sits 2.5 back right now. You know, another bad stretch, you know, for the teams ahead of them. I mean, luckily right now, the Braves are 7-3 in their last 10. Philadelphia is 8-2 in their last 10. So they've been able to stay ahead of the Mets, you know, in the last 10 games. But the Mets, they've done a great job of keeping up, and that's what they have to do if they have any hopes of competing for a wild card or even possibly a division, depending on what happens, you know, within the rest of the, you know, the National League East. But overall, that's a team that's really, they've surprised me as well, Scott. I'm 100% with you, because I didn't think they were going to be even remotely in this spot.
Well, and Matt Barr, the resident Mets fan, pointing out that they won consecutive series against the Reds, Braves, Royals, Pirates with the sweep, and yep, the Dodgers. So, yeah, some quality opponents along the way, and they've played well enough to win those games, showing signs of life from some of these guys that they're paying a lot more money than they should be, and that, you know, overbloated payroll is actually getting a little bit of results. Again, it's early, so not going to get too excited about them because it is the Mets and they'll find a way to blow it, but did want to give them props early on for showing us some something. They also,
I'm proud of you.
Yeah, I know, it's growth.
Yeah, you know, baby steps.
They also debuted their City Connects this week, and I'm assuming that you saw that. You and I didn't talk.
I know,
which was kind of weird because we're usually on top of discussing the City Connects.
That's true, yeah.
The pictures circulate, but what did you think of the City Connects? Because I again had thoughts, and I was a little bit shocked at my own thoughts.
I could take them or leave them. I mean, they didn't blow me out of the water. I don't hate them. I don't love them. But, I mean, I get there. The City Connects for me are some that I actually have to see them on, you know, in the game for me to really make a big determination. There's a handful that I absolutely love. I think, you know, I think Seattle's are amazing. Colorado's are phenomenal. Obviously, I think the Reds are really sharp. Philadelphia's new ones are really, I mean, I think they're nice as well. But when the Mets, when they debut them, see, again, now, you know, you take a couple steps forward here and you're starting to grow. You get right back into Scott again. I mean,
well, look, I mean, Philly's just, I did not like them. They were not great.
You're just saying that because it's Philadelphia. That's why.
No, because you didn't let me talk about the Mets, dick.
Sorry. Okay. I'll just let you go. It's okay. I mean,
because I actually like the Mets. I mean, gun to my head, if you were to, you know, dumpster fire or fire, I'm gonna have to go with fire. I'm a big, yeah, like, black's one of my favorite colors, and I really, the hat is the best part. having the having the bridge on, you know, the bridge scape on the bottom of the near the brim, and the logo. I like the color scheme. Looks clean. It like you said, it doesn't blow me away. And the City Connects, I feel like I usually have a really strong opinion one way or the other. It's not usually kind of middling, but the more I've seen of the Mets, the more it's you know, I kind of have seen it in a favorable light. And when I first saw it, I thought, you know, not bad, not horrible, but they've grown on me. And I definitely think that if I had to rank them amongst the all of the City Connects, that they'd finish somewhere in the top third, because there are a lot of them that are just god awful. So they did avoid the god awful tag, that's for sure.
Well, there we go. Okay. Real quick. Well, with that being said, okay, what's the best and worst in your opinion?
The best City Connects. I kind of like the Angels. The Angels creep with the old school lettering. Though those are, I'm a big fan of those. I mean, obviously, I can't deny that I love the Braves using the
those are disgustingly awesome.
Which I mean, when I funny enough, when I first saw the redesign, I wasn't crazy about them, but once they actually released everything, well, because I like the original so much, and then when I found out that Nike and Fanatics decided that unilaterally, more or less, the teams were only going to have three jersey options, and that the only way that the Braves could keep their, you know, throwbacks for the Hank Aaron era was to do them in this pseudo City Connect jersey, I was upset about that. But once I saw the end result and they actually got him out there, I liked him a lot more. And then I do like Colorado. Colorados are awesome too.
Yes. Okay. I'll give you the yes.
And then as far as the worst, I still think I said it from the first time I saw him, and I still hold firm the Red Sox, the Boston.
Yes.
I know that they have the whole Boston Marathon connection and everything, but I hate them.
No, I'm with you. That's the one I'm just like, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of the Washington Nationals one either.
Oh yeah, the cherry blossoms. That got a lot of love, but I'm not huge on them either. I like the hat and I like the pink and gray color scheme.
Yeah,
but I just didn't like the design on the jerseys.
That's why San Diego's. I freaking love San Diego's as well.
San Diego's are good.
Yeah, those are nasty. I absolutely love them. There's so many good ones out there, and it's just, I mean, man, that's why. Like I said, I'm one that I've got to see them, you know, on the field first to really make a concrete decision on whether I like them or not. We'll go with that. But from what I've seen so far, I like them. I mean, at least what.
Matt's saying that Colorado looks like a pack of Newports. And that he
Shit.
They do kind of look like a pack of Newports.
I mean, if I didn't have the green screen, I was going to be wearing it, because I absolutely love that jersey. And I got it as soon as it came out. Freaking awesome. But, yeah, I look like shit on the green screen, so I can't do that. But pack of Newports. That's, you know, now I'm never going to look at that the same. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate that. Damn, man. Shit. Well, where do you want to go from here, Scott?
Well, I mean, talking about the Mets and giving the Mets praise was all I had planned for.
Kind of feel dirty, like.
Well, again, props do or props to do. I mean, I could point out that the Yankees have played pretty decently well so far, I don't want to go crazy with it. Yeah, I don't need anybody calling to see if I'm all right. But before we get out of here, let's talk real quickly about this afternoon. Perfect timing. To discuss the Yankees getting Aaron Boone thrown out of the game after Mike's picked up that the umpire had gave him a warning to keep his mouth shut. The camera stayed on him the entire time. He clearly never said a word, but because somebody in the crowd said something, the umpire overheard it, threw him out. Boone gets livid, says he never said a word, and the umpire responds, he doesn't care. Somebody said something over in the general area, and he was gone. One of the best tossings of all time, only because it happened in New York.
I don't care if it happened in New York or not. I mean, that is just it's hysterical slash embarrassing. My God. And Hunter Winstead was the umpire that did it. And if you get a chance, go watch the breakdown from John Boy, because it's hilarious. John Boy does. I mean, if you've seen any of the work John Boy does, it's awesome anyway. But the breakdown of this one is just great. And this dude is just sitting above the dugout, and he just yells at the umpire, like, dude, you like be better home plate or something like that. And Winstead gets pissed and runs Aaron Boone. He catches some shrapnel. He's just standing there like, what the hell just happened?
I love the idea that a Yankees fan is why the Yankees manager got tossed out. That's you can't make that up.
I know you can't. It is the funniest. I mean, the video, and in all seriousness, if I were Aaron Boone, I would have freaking gone nuclear. I would have been so pissed. So I'm 1,000% with Aaron Boone. I like Aaron Boone. I know you probably don't because, you know.
Can't stand him.
Yeah, I figured that. I like him just simply because, you know, his time here in Cincinnati, and, you know, I loved him when he was here. But, man, that was that was unique. That was one of the funniest things I've seen. Even my oldest son, Travis, he always texts me when he gets home from school, and he's like, Dad, did you see Aaron Boone get ejected? And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? And I looked, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, that is amazing. He said it's one of the greatest things you'll ever see, Dad. And I was like, man, you're not kidding. Hilarious.
We got a good question here from Mike. He wants to know, what's her favorite ejection we've ever seen, and why is it Wally Backman throwing all the balls and bats onto the field?
The best part is that Wally Backman part is when he goes up into the radio booth to confront the general manager of the team, and he said he's going to be nice, and he just loses his shit on him. It is amazing. Anytime, I think you can find all that stuff that's on like Twitter/X. It's hysterical.
Well, which is your favorite ejection, if you had to nail one down?
You know, honestly, the Lou Piniella one where he's throwing the bases, I think that – because that was the one that really, you know, when I was a kid, I really remember that one. That one stuck out here in Cincinnati. That was just one that – and I mean, good old Sweet Lou. I mean, he just
– Lou going nuclear.
Yeah. I mean, you know, death taxes and Lou going nuclear. That's really what it comes down to. It's the guy just – man, he would get into it, and that was one. And honestly, in any Bobby Cox ejection, the dude's, you know, I know you're going to probably lean that way too.
No.
Okay.
I got one for you. My favorite one is Lloyd McClendon getting thrown out and picking up first and taking it with him.
Yes.
Struggling to pull out first base.
Yes.
And then leaving with
it. That's right. I forgot about that one.
It wasn't as animated as Lou kicking his hat around and getting up in the dude's face. And Bobby had, I mean, I saw Bobby get ejected so many times, and I can remember countless times where I was just sitting there cracking up as he went off. But man, Lloyd McClendon sitting there struggling to pull first base out of the ground and then leaving with it is probably my all-time favorite one.
Dude,
it's at least my favorite one of the last, you know, 30 years.
Oh, hands down, that one's amazing. Another one is, and the video was circulated on social media, the one Terry Collins, after Noah Syndergaard throws, I forget who it was, you know, throws, I want to say behind the batter or something like that, and, you know, he gets run, and he's standing there, and Terry Collins comes out. Just the interaction, it's something that, you know, baseball fans, we don't really get to see the inner workings of an ejection like that. And you see Terry Collins just absolutely losing his mind and the umpire giving it right back at him. And it's a really cool video to see just because it's something you never thought you would see it. But it was like a lot of the comments on it is like the greatest mic'd up moment in baseball history. And I would have to agree with that. There was just something about, you know, an ejection in baseball. It's awesome. You know,
it's better than a fake bench clearing brawl.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. When the bullpen guys come hustling their ass off, you know, to literally stand there and just everyone just looks at each other. No, give me an ejection all day long.
Well, yes, especially by an unsuspecting manager who gets tossed for something that
batters into the game too. Like that's the funny part.
Oh, was it? See, I didn't even know that it was that early.
So what happened? Do you know like what happened like leading up to it?
No, I just got the breakdown of the like what happened with him getting ejected. I didn't know the circumstances around.
Okay. So I want to say it was Esteri Ruiz first batter. He goes and gets hit on the foot, and it was a check swing, and they appeal to first base umpire. First base umpire says he didn't go, therefore it's a, you know, hit by pitch. And so Aaron Boone's like, dude, like he's yelling at Hunter Winkelstedt, like, dude, you can call that. And that's what ticked him off. And he said, you know, right from the get-go, like, you know, hey, I did my part. I was watching for the, you know, for the hit by pitch. You know, if you got anything else to say, you're gone. And that's when Aaron Boone was like, all right, fine, whatever. And then the fan yelled and he gets run. But yeah, that's all it was, because he was just mad that, you know, I want to say it was Esteri Ruiz, but he gets hit in the foot and it looked like he went on the check swing. And Aaron Boone's yelling, like saying in the first base umpire, that was a full swing, man. Like, you know, that should be a strike, not a hit by pitch. Well, and that's just how it escalated. And then poor Aaron Boone.
Sucks to suck, bum.
Of course. Of course. Oh shit. Yeah. That's all it was. It was really, I mean, it was funny. It was good stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just heard the breakdown of what happened, and that was funny enough for me. Like I did see the video of him getting rung, but I missed like what led up to it. So.
Yeah. You have to watch the John Boy breakdown.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I do need to see the whole breakdown of it to make sure I get the full totality of how funny it was.
Yeah, it's classic. It is. It's, I mean, nothing short of phenomenal. Because literally a manager gets run for not saying a word. That's the funny part about it. And like you're gonna say, I mean, hey, it's, you know, it's even better because it's Yankees, but you know, I get it.
It is.
I'm not arguing it, but
I got no problem with it at all.
Man, I can argue that. real quick before this is not in terms of episode wise, we don't really have much to really discuss. But let's look ahead, you know, at the next week here, because there are a handful of big series coming up. Scott, in terms of series that have your, you know, that have your attention, what are a couple that you're looking at, whether it be interdivisional or, you know, just regular scheduling, I guess you could say. Regardless, well, what the hell, what series catch your attention?
I hadn't really looked at the series, and you're throwing me off here. So
oh, shit. Give okay,
me
well, I'll take them, then. Oh, damn.
Okay. I didn't look ahead on the schedule, so
you obviously didn't look ahead at the rundown either. Jesus Christ.
God. This one right here. I did look at the rundown, but I missed the part that said anything about the schedules coming up.
Oh, okay. The part where it says look ahead. Awesome. There we go. Hot damn, Scott.
Look ahead can mean a lot of things, you asshole.
I'll give you that. What do you think it means, though? I mean, really?
Look, I'm going to tell you what I'm looking forward to right now. We just got done talking about Cleveland, and guess who's headed to Atlanta next weekend?
Hey, that's actually one of the series that I have highlighted. No.
Yeah, look at that, baby. Cleveland and Atlanta. Sign me up for that one. That's the one I'm looking forward to next.
There are two huge interdivisional rival or series and to start off the week. The one in the American League West, which is Seattle and Texas. The top two teams in the American League West battle it out. That's one to definitely keep an eye on, because let's be real, God only knows what the hell is going to happen with that. You know, it's Seattle seemingly starting to pick it up. They sweep Cincinnati, and then they take two or three at Colorado, which, I mean, again, you're playing Colorado, but you're playing in the snow one of those games. But that's one interdivisional game that has my attention. Another one takes place in the National League Central, and that is a four-game series that pits Milwaukee against Pittsburgh. That's a big series as well. If Milwaukee can continue to flex their muscle, you know, you could really kick any hopes that Pittsburgh has right out the window, you know, with the series butt kicking in that one there. But those are the two real interdivisional series that catch my eye to start off the week. But to end it, Detroit and Kansas City in the National or in the American League Central. I think that's a huge three-game set at Detroit. I mean, Kansas City, you know, they've got a rebound here. They've struggled outside of, you know, taking two or three against Chicago. You know, they dropped, you know, big series to Baltimore. Here's their chance to really get it back against, you know, against the Detroit team that you're going to be battling with the rest of the year.
All right. Good talk.
Shit. Awesome. Yeah. Oh, shit. I love it. I love it.
Oh, man. Good stuff. Well, I'm guessing that's all you got because you just stopped.
Well, no, I just thought I should have known you. Yeah.
I just told you. I'm like, I didn't fucking look at no schedule. I got Braves and Guardians, and I'm like, man. Ooh, 95 World Series rematch. Let's go.
Awesome. There we go. Okay. I mean, there's a couple of that other ones. I mean, you've got Blue Jays. They go to Kansas City for four before returning home against the Dodgers for three. So that's a big one. I'm trying to think. Let's see. The Reds. Like I said, the Reds have a hellish month and a half coming up here, and it starts, you know, tonight. They just lost tonight 7-0 to
could you go on ahead and beat Philadelphia? That'd be great.
Not starting off real well. So, tough. But they've got four against Philadelphia before going to Texas to face the defending World Series champs Rangers on the three-game set, you know, on the road. So that's, you know, that's huge for the Reds. I mean, really, other than that, the Phillies, you know, like I said, they've got four with Cincinnati. Then they head to San Diego for three. So that's one to definitely keep an eye on as well. San Diego can, you know, they can do some damage. And, you know, that's an intriguing one as well. But other than that, you know, like you said, the Guardians, out of all the series, the Guardians Braves one. That's hands down the best one. Definitely can't miss baseball.
Two of the best teams in the league going toe-to-toe this early in the season just to see where they're at. I don't know. And see how for real, if you're worried about the I almost called them the Indians. If you're worried about the Guardians or you're doubting the Guardians because of who they've played so far, they'll get a real test when they go to Atlanta. But I think that's going to do it, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
You were going to say nothing. And you
I was going to add something on, but I mean, so just kidding. I'll just shut the hell right up now. So
hey, no, that's the Oscars music. That's the house music. They're playing us off. We got to get out of here.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah, I got nothing.
This has been another episode of the Backwards Cave Baseball Show. Thank you guys for joining us. I am Scott, your host, along with my host, Chris. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, or X, or whatever the hell you're calling it, Impact Sports Cincinnati, and of course, on the Craft Boot Sports Podcasting Network. Thank you guys very much for joining us this week. We will catch you all. Wait, no, next Monday, we won't be here. We've got baseball, and Chris is out of here, but we'll catch you in 2 weeks. We'll probably have a much longer show since we'll have 2 weeks worth of stuff to catch up on. So, for Kirk, I'm Scott. We'll see you back here in 2 weeks. Have a good night. Thanks for listening.